person getting up to preach immediately following the worship set and the announcements like that, because it almost feels like, why would I preach when the worship set was so amazing and connected us so well with the heart of God? And isn't really, that's what preaching is supposed to do. It's supposed to connect us to the heart of God. And so, yay, thank you so much for the worship team. I want to give them an appreciation. This week, we're talking about Daniel. And, you know, Daniel is famous for his visions. In fact, most of the time when anybody ever talks about Daniel, their immediate go-to is his prophecies, his visions, the things that he saw, and because they're so end times related. We're not talking about those today. Not at all. We're talking about Daniel the person. See, in the journey of faith and life today, in trying to recognize what it is in biblical characters that we need to be meaningful for our faith journey, we've been looking at different characters throughout the Bible. Today we're looking at Daniel, and we're looking at what made Daniel culturally relevant. For faith today, you need cultural relevance. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. One of the biggest problems with cultural relevance is knowing who you are. So let's talk about who Daniel was. The book of Daniel was written by about 530 BCE, before the Common Era. So Daniel's life spans from about 605 to 535, at least the text of the book does. His life extends beyond that. And in it, you could separate it a couple different ways. You could talk about God's prophetic plan for the Gentiles, and you could talk about God's prophetic plan for Israel, and that's a neat division of the book. The first seven chapters are for the Gentiles, and 8 through 12 is for the end times for Israel. You could also separate it into visions of other people, the first six chapters, and then the second six chapters, Daniel's visions and dreams. Now, if you're at all familiar with the Bible character of Daniel from Sunday school or from your own reading, you'll remember the furnace with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. You'll remember the writing on the wall, chapter 5. And most famously, you'll remember the lion's den in chapter 6. And that was probably your only exposure in Sunday school to Daniel. In fact, realistically, it's probably your only exposure to Daniel at all. Because we don't really preach on Daniel because the visions are a little intimidating. So this is the context from which Daniel's speaking. At this time, Israel, there were two waves of exile that happened in Israel. So you had the north, which was the 10 tribes, and they went into exile before the southern group. They went years later. So you had one round of exile in the north, and then in the south, you had the second exile. So the first exile, they took just the nobility, just the ruling class. Cut the head off the fish, it dies. That was, you know, cut the head off the snake, it's dead. You remove the head, everyone else, they're sheep, they'll follow. So that was the governing rationale in the first exile with the Assyrians. The second group, the Babylonian exile, they were far more vicious. They literally lined up a chain and hooked people onto it with little clips of ring. Hooked them on a line, and literally everybody, house to house, add them to the chain and march them off. Houses are empty. Okay, run the chain for half a kilometer. Okay, this group of people, this is your new house. Empty the house from this chain, fill the house with that chain. People had no idea about the geography, the climate, the gardening, the crops, the economy. You'd mix people from Greece in with people from Egypt, and you just throw them in this community, and there'd be nobody, they didn't know anybody, and you'd do the same at the other end of the trip. So Daniel found himself far away in a foreign land without anybody he knew. The exception is that Daniel was of noble birth. We learn in Daniel chapter 1. The background, the story to how Daniel got here. And people of noble birth were frequently more literate, more cultured, had better manners, but had a sense of how not to offend the king and how to deal with foreign dignitaries. So they tended to rise to positions of importance. And so when we look at who is Daniel, well, we know that he was famously known in the king's court, that he was of noble birth. Ezekiel refers to him as three times, very positively. He lived by faith and prayer and courage and consistency and lack of compromise. Daniel was, again, like Joseph, he was one of those characters in the Bible that you looked at and went, wow, this guy's amazing. How do people be so amazing? In fact, there's nothing anywhere negative written about Daniel. He's listed as a prophet, and he's often lifted up as an epitome of wisdom and righteousness, especially in the book of Ezekiel. Except what you probably didn't know is that Daniel was likely a eunuch. So at the time, it was actually fairly common practice, similar to what happened in the Roman Catholic Church, where they started to say that priests weren't allowed to get married and have kids. Initially, they were. Initially, priests were allowed to be married and have children. But the problem came with this notion of succession. Well, my dad was the priest, so I was raised up by him, so why shouldn't I be the priest? And the Catholic Church wanted to head that off because they recognized that genetic lineage is not a good indication of spiritual lineage. That your physical son or daughter is not necessarily the son or daughter of your faith and heart. And so the Catholic Church said, no, we can't have this because it'll drift. So they said no to that. It caused all kinds of problems, probably not implemented very well, but it happened. But this was an old thought. It existed well at the time. So it was a normal practice. We see it in Jeremiah 38, verse 7. We talk about Stephen, he witnessed to the Ethiopian eunuch. Well, why was he a eunuch? It was to prevent him from having children to try to raise up into that office. Because now, your office is based on your competency and your character, not on your lineage. Right? Which I get. I mean, that makes sense. Except here's the major, major, major problem with that. Deuteronomy chapter 23 verse 1 states that anybody that has a defect, anybody that's their organs have been damaged or removed are not allowed to worship God. Not allowed. Leviticus 21 says that anybody that is not perfect, anybody that has a blemish, their leg is too long, an extra toe, you know, if they're missing an eye, which actually happens, if there's something wrong with them physically, they're not allowed to worship God. They're not allowed in the assembly. They're not allowed to participate in worship. And the Jewish people kind of grabbed that and ran with that and took it to the point where they were saying, unless you are physically spotless, unless you are physically perfect, you can't worship God. And by extension of that, they said, well, it shows how holy God is, but part of that is also because you're supposed to be blameless in his sight. You're supposed to be flawless and perfect in God's sight to approach the throne of grace. To approach God in his holy place, you have to be perfect morally, spiritually, in terms of your heart, and in terms of your body. That's the problem. God is so holy that he can't bear to have imperfection in front of him. That was their understanding of God. And is that true? Yes. The answer is yes. God is exactly that still. The difference is the power of grace. So hold on a second. We've now got a disconnect. Ezekiel, you know, it kind of brings new meanings to the words, dare to be a Daniel. Oh, boy. And for all of you fathers that are done having kids, we won't go there. Okay. What changed? What changed that Ezekiel, that Isaiah that all the prophets, and even in the New Testament, Daniel is lifted up as this icon of faith and nobility and character and wisdom when he is out the door disqualified from worship. What happened? When did it change? So in Isaiah chapter 2, or sorry, in Isaiah 39, verse 5 to 7, and 2 Kings chapter 20, 16 to 18, these are actually one of the few instances in the Bible where a passage is repeated verbatim, word for word, same passage, two different places in the Bible. Very rare. When something like that happens, we talked last week about breakout texts, when things break the normal pattern. This is it breaking the normal pattern. So when a text breaks the normal pattern, that's a big flag to say, pay attention. This passage says, no, no longer. No longer shall they be cut off. It's a potent passage. I want you to read it. Likewise, Isaiah flipped in 56, verse 3 to 5. Write these down. Come back to them. I want you to read them and then reread Daniel's life. Isaiah 56 says, again, the same thing. I am going to give them an inheritance that's better than sons. To those that fear the Lord, those that walk in his ordinance, those that respect his commands, to them I will give an inheritance that is greater than sons or daughters. And even before, this was before Ezekiel was written. You could see that the shift had changed early in Daniel's life. Matthew 19, Jesus himself says that there are eunuchs who have been made that way by man, those that had no choice, and those that have chosen to be eunuchs, quote-unquote eunuchs, for the sake of the kingdom. Meaning those who have chosen not to get married and have kids. Metaphorical eunuchs in that context. But ultimately, people that have chosen not to have family and children, but have sought to nurture the things of God in themselves and in others, in a sense, for God's kingdom, not for their own legacy, but for God's legacy. So why did it change? Why the change? What happened? I mean, we know it happened, but why did it happen? You know, I could say it was about Daniel and his cultural relevance, and it is, but that's not good enough. You got to get beneath that. How is it that Daniel was culturally relevant when he didn't even have contact with his own culture? How is it that Daniel, a person cut off from their roots, understood themselves well enough to be able not only know themselves and continue their faith, but then impact another community's faith, another culture, and their notion of faith? How? How did he do that? What was it about Daniel? Why did it change? I'm going to suggest that it's about vision. Vision is one of those misunderstood things. Vision is about seeing what is unseeable. It's about having an idea of where we can go, what we can be, maybe what we should be, what we get to be. Vision is about seeing beyond the now, beyond this, beyond my tendency to look down and look inward and focus on my own problems and my issues and where I'm at. Vision is about being bigger than me, bigger than my life. When I die, and that may come sooner for some of you than others, but when we pass on from this journey into the next journey, which is going to be amazing, what am I leaving behind? What is my legacy? Am I inspiring people towards greatness? Am I raising up people in faith? Am I instilling in them the things of deep value that I've found in life and faith into others, into the next generation? And in doing that, how do I do that? How do I relate to that next generation even? That's the big question mark that just permeates our culture, isn't it? See, the thing is, vision connects us to the why, and why connects us to purpose. Why do we exist? And so I'm going to suggest a pattern to read the life of Daniel. Reread the life of Daniel. Not as visions. Those will mess with your head a little bit. Let's just focus on the person. Let's look at Daniel. I'm going to give you a framework to look at Daniel from. First, love. Love God and love others. Is that not a good distillation of the purpose of faith? Love God and love others. The problem is you can't love something that you don't know, can you? You gotta learn. You gotta put yourself out there to learn and understand and seek. As much as we're sought, we gotta seek. And so we have to know before we can love, right? And so it's not to know about, but to know. It's about the relationship with God. So you have to know and love. Wes at the back knows where I'm headed. But it's not enough just to love. I mean, hearers of the word, not doers. You have to put your faith into action. Not hearers only, but doers of it. So you have to serve. To know, to love, and to serve. This is a very easy pattern to run through the life of Daniel, because every single event in the book of Daniel follows that pattern. Let's shotgun a couple really quick. But before we do, sorry. See, this is why Daniel knew who he was. This is why Daniel could impact his culture and the other culture. How is it that separated from his culture, he changed it? How is it that he comes in as a foreigner and he changes the culture he's in so much that even the kings are petitioning and making laws about his God? That's incredible. You see, when you know God, to know God, when you choose to listen to him, you gain his attention. When you care about what matters to God, you gain his trust. And when you're looking out for his interests, when you serve him, you gain his support. Attention, trust, and support. But it's not just God that works with people. I mean, seriously, spend 5 minutes with your neighbor. When you choose to listen to your neighbor, guess what your neighbor does? They start paying attention to you. When you care about what matters to others, they start to trust you. And when you're looking out for their interests, guess what they start doing? They start going, yeah, you know, they're valuable. There's something there that needs to be supported. So again, Daniel took this simple pattern of knowing who he was, who God told him he was, followed this simple pattern, revolutionized his own culture and the culture he's in. Let's quickly run through it. Daniel 1, I'm just going to highlight 3 points out of this first chapter. It's when Daniel is first introduced to the court. He's a young man. He doesn't want to be defiled because they eat pigs, and they're not allowed to eat pigs. And he never knows what's in the meat because it was a very frequent cultural phenomenon that they'd grind up meat and mix it. And they'd mix cow with pig, kind of like hot dogs today. They'd mix chicken and eggs. They'd mix chickens and eggs. They'd mix blood with chicken to make sausages, like, or to meat dishes. And all those things are forbidden to Jews. They're not allowed. And so Daniel says, he says to the guy that's overseeing all these young noblemen that are now eunuchs that are supposed to serve the king, he says to him, look, can I get a soft pass on this? Can I opt out? And the guy goes, look, and Daniel listens to him. And he says, I'm going to be in trouble if they look good and you look like crap, because my job is to make sure you look good, that you're well-educated and well-fed and healthy. That's my job. You want to sink me because, no. And so Daniel says, look, I get it. I want to preserve your life. He says, I'll tell you what. Let's do a trial run. And if it doesn't work out, fine. You be the judge. You decide how we go from there. And so the guy agreed, and they did it. And then verse 16, he fully supports Daniel. He saw that Daniel and his friends were in much better shape. They were healthier. They were happier. They were doing better. He goes, I'm on page. You got it. See, when Daniel showed that he was looking out for the steward's interests, the steward was willing to look out for his. Okay. Again, Daniel's introduced. King Nebuchadnezzar has this dream. And, you know, Nebuchadnezzar was a smart guy in some ways, but he's a real moron in other ways. So in this case, Nebuchadnezzar's like, I want to ferret out all the fake and phonies from the real wise men. You know, separate the wise guys from the wise men. So he says, look, tell me not just what the dream meant. You got to tell me what the dream was. Good luck with that. Everyone's like, our heads are going to roll. Why? Because the king, Rory, that's a great question. Because the king said, I'm tired of these people that sound really smart, but they're not really smart. Right? He says, I'm tired of people that sound smart, but aren't smart. I'm tired of people that think they understand things of the Spirit, but just sound good. You know, it's a fortune teller versus a real prophet. So the king's like, no, I want someone real. I want someone with substance and power. Does that make sense, kid? Hey, pigtails. Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay. So when you choose, so Daniel goes, whoa, what's the urgency here? What's the big deal? Daniel chose to listen, and immediately the attention of the king was on him. Immediately. Verse 30, Daniel shows that he's concerned about the king. He says, as for me, this mystery has been revealed to me, not because of wisdom that I have more than all the living, but in order that you may, that it may be made known to you, and that you may understand what's going on up here. Daniel, God showed this to me so that I can help you out. This isn't about me. This is about God. Daniel knew who he was, and he made sure that other people didn't blur the line between the greatness of God and Daniel's greatness. So King Nebuchadnezzar hears the interpretation and, you know, jump down to verse 47 in chapter 2. Really amazing line. You've got to remember, a pagan who did not believe in the God of Israel. He says, the king answered Daniel and said, truly your God is the God of gods and the Lord of kings and a revealer of mysteries. For you have been able to reveal this mystery. Then the king honored Daniel. To know, to love, and to serve. Well, it happens again. We have the golden image, the fiery furnace, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, chapter 3. And then, and chapter 4, then Nebuchadnezzar starts to understand this God. And so it happens again, chapter 4. They go, look, we get it. We know you, Daniel. You are a man in whom God has honored. Verse 19, he gains his trust. Now, this is really amazing. Daniel, who is named Belshazzar, prophet of my God, or speaker for my king, now serves Nebuchadnezzar's, Belteshazzar will shortly be serving Belshazzar, the king's son. Interesting that he named his highest advisor and his son almost exactly the same name. But here in this vision, Daniel says, Daniel gains his trust, and the king then supports him. He says, therefore, Daniel, in serving, turns back to the king, and he says, therefore, because the king's got this really big issue with pride going on, saying that he's awesome. And Daniel says, therefore, king, let my words be helpful to you. I'm trying to serve you, so accept this. Break off your sin by practicing righteousness, and your iniquities by showing mercy to the oppressed, that there may be perhaps be a lengthening of your prosperity. It didn't happen. I'm famous about the story of Nebuchadnezzar, how he almost became a feral animal in the fields. And, you know, his time ends and his son rises to power. And you know what happens? Daniel's now got a long history of serving a king. He's got a reputation of being a man of wisdom and of God, even among the foreigners. And so Belshazzar, in his classic sweet move of stupidity, takes the cups and the plates and the gold stuff from the temple. They stole it, cleaned out the temple, and took all these gold cups, and he's like, hey, these are pretty sweet. Use them for dinner. So he starts drinking from the cup intended for the Messiah, the cup intended for the plate intended to host the bread of presence, the thing that represents God is with you. He'd use that as a plate for finger food for him and his girlfriends and their play toys. And so God writes on the wall. We're familiar with this passage. Many, many tekel perez, or measured, weighed and divided is what it translates as. Now, you want to look into that, that's great, but I'm focusing on Daniel here. He was freaked out by this, the writing on the wall, his weird hand writing, it freaked him right out. He was wondering what he had eaten, really. And so Daniel arrives, and he knows full well what just happened. And he says, and the king's like, anybody that can answer this, I'm going to make it great for them. And Daniel is actually loves Belshazzar. He doesn't take the bait of riches. He goes, let your gifts be for yourself. You give the reward to another. I don't need it. I don't want it. But I will read the writing to the king and make known the interpretation. Daniel's not in it for the money. And so he serves the king by helping him understand. And, you know, he delivers horrible news to King Belshazzar. He's like, yeah, by the way, you're going to die. I'm sorry. You crossed the line, buddy. You're going down. And Belshazzar gave the command, and Daniel was clothed with purple and a chain of gold was put around his neck, and a proclamation was made about him that he should be the third ruler in the kingdom. Okay, this is astonishing. King says, hey, freaky event, scared me, what do I do? Prophet says, yeah, you're going to die. The king goes, great, you're awesome, here's everything. It shows you not only how much the king trusted what he said, but recognized that Daniel was the kind of guy that you could trust and respect no matter what. No matter what came out of that guy's mouth, you knew that it was from God. You knew that it was trustworthy. You knew that it was from his character, not just his position. So he's gone. Belshazzar dies that night, and Darius the Mede of Medo-Persia takes his place. And he was about 62 years old, which puts Daniel at pretty close to the same age, maybe a little older. So Daniel's now served in a foreign court his entire life, never been home, never been permitted in the temple. You know, C.S. Lewis said this, you never know how much you really believe anything until its truth or falsehood becomes a matter of life and death to you. Until you push to the edge, you never really know how much you believe it. And you know what? Just an aside for us in the working world, for those of you that have managers and coworkers, which is pretty much everybody, Daniel learned something that I want to share with you, that Daniel's known all along, and he's lived his whole life, but that we, in our humanness, tend to not connect with. Bring your plea before the one you can trust to get it done. Don't complain to your coworkers about your coworkers. Please don't. Don't complain to your mom and dad or your brothers and sisters about your spouse. That is also a very bad idea. I might have done that. Don't complain to your small group leader or your other people in church about the pastor, about the elders, about the direction our church is going, about the worship, about things you like or don't like. Don't complain to people that can't do anything about it. You make yourself look bad, and really, you're contributing to the enemy's work. You're making it easier for the enemy to tear down what God wants to build up. And I get it. It's natural. Let's fight that natural tendency. What I'm saying is bring your plea before the one you can trust to get it done. That means first, start in prayer about your job. Start in prayer about your coworkers. Start in prayer about your spouse. Start in prayer about your church. Start there. Then, what I want you to do, since you've gone to the true one who can do all things, then you go to the one he has put in place to listen to you. Because leadership is supposed to know, love, and serve. And I can assure you without a shadow of a doubt, that is the leadership here. We wish to know, we wish to love, and we wish to serve you, God, and the community. When you choose to listen to God, you gain his attention. So all of a sudden, this new regime rises up under Darius, and they don't like Daniel. They're like, we got no in. His character's tight. His behavior's awesome. This guy is wise and generous and kind. He wouldn't take rewards. You can't bribe him. You can't cheat him. You can't. He's a fortress. We got nothing on this guy. The only thing we've got, they say, is if we can find a way to find a problem with his faith. Nah, that's our in. So they go to Darius and they go, all right, make a law so that everyone has to come to you to fix their problems. And if anybody goes to anybody else but you for 30 days, kill them. Ugh, it's a little dark. What does Daniel do? I'll read it to you. It's amazing. Go back, read it again yourself. When Daniel knew that the document had been signed, he went to his house where he had windows in the upper chambers open towards Jerusalem. He got down on his knees 3 times a day and prayed and gave thanks before God. When he learned that the document, like immediately, guy's like, okay. Anyone goes to anybody but me, they're a dead man. As soon as it's signed, Daniel's like, I'm going to go talk to God. Because he went to his king. He knew who the real ruler of all the earth is. Because he knew that the one who told him who he is the only one who can do all things. And so it happens again in chapter 6, 6:6, 6:10, 6:16, 6:23. We just read from 6:10. And you know what? Daniel in the lion's den, what happens? 6:16. I want you to reread it. Go home. Reread Daniel, particularly chapter 6. This will jump off the page at you. 6:23, what happens? The king is so amazed at what happens that he now wants to support Daniel's faith. We come back to that simple slide that we started with. When you choose to listen to God, you gain God's attention. When you care about what matters to God, you gain God's trust. When you're looking out for God's interest, you gain God's support. And so as great as that is for helping us understand Daniel, I want to turn a little bit towards application here as we close and talk about how we can use this to have cultural relevance today. And I kind of hit it a little bit about who you complain to. But the first point is, when you choose to listen to God, you gain his attention. So stay curious. Ask questions. It works with God. It also works with your neighbor. Curious people are curious. Interested people are interesting. When you care about God, what matters to God, you gain his trust. Love what he loves. If you love your neighbor's kids, if you care about your coworker's family, you learn their name, learn their spouse's name. Ask them how their weekend was with their spouse name inserted here exactly. That speaks volumes. Love what he loves. Love what they love. When you're looking out for his interests, you gain his support. Lastly, serve. I've heard people complain, I don't want to serve there, it's not my gifting. Oh, I'm sorry. What you'd forget is that God doesn't call the equipped, he equips the called. And if there's a need, I want to encourage you to get outside yourself and serve, because when you do that, the amazing thing is that you are blessed. You may be serving, you may be working, but the amazing thing is that you will never fail to be surprised by where God shows up to do something amazing inside you. Get outside yourself. You know, I'm going to add one last thing. Share. If Daniel hadn't recorded his story, if Ezekiel hadn't learned about him, if Isaiah hadn't learned about him, he wouldn't have inspired his own culture. If he hadn't shared about who God is to the Babylonians and to the Assyrians, he wouldn't have changed their culture. Inspire others with the stories of how God has worked in and through you, and particularly what he's done in you. Joy is contagious. And so these 4 points, in a sense, frame Daniel's vision of life. Stay curious. Love what he loves. Get outside yourself and share the joy. Now, lastly, I mentioned that Wes kind of knows where we're going, because he and I have had a conversation a couple weeks ago about this. This is also our vision of missions. Our missions team, this is their vision. To love, to know, to love, and to serve. And so we share it with you. I want to encourage you. If Daniel, just by vision, just by having a vision of who God says he is, could change 2 cultures. By that, he understands what it means to know who he is, to know who his God is, and to love. That knowledge of self and of God is world-changing. So the key of cultural relevance starts with knowing who you are. And from there, stepping into a vision. Turn to God and ask him to tell you who you are. Turn to God and ask him what he wants you to do with your life. What is your purpose? Because who you are and what you are meant to do are deeply rooted in who God has intended you to be from the beginning. So we're going to close. I'm going to invite the worship team up. We're going to close with a song. Because it is spot on. Daniel went from being a person that was told that he's not allowed to worship God to becoming a person not enslaved by his religion, but that transformed his community of faith so that they learned to look beyond the physical and understand the heart.